And welcome to What's Left, a weekly political discussion challenging the mainstream left. I'm Eduardo Barca with Andy Lipson. Today, we will be tackling the... Well, we've changed our mind, I think. We'll be tackling the aerial strikes on northern Syria, which is largely dominated by the Kurds, which Donald Trump has decided to pull out the support troops in that area to pull out and maybe even distract us from what's going on here in the USA. So anyhow, this is Friday, and I think it's a third day on the attacks on the northern strip of Syria, and we'll delve into it.
Yes. Third day or second day?
I think it's the third day, okay. Because I think he went into it into Tuesday.
Okay.
And it was announced, I think, Sunday or Monday.
Yeah.
I think what needs to be said is that Turkey has launched an aerial and ground assault on northern
aerial,
Syria.
Ground attack as well. Yeah.
So targeting Kurdish northern areas.
Yeah. But I think what we're going to be talking also, a big part, hopefully, is about what the United States has done, is doing, what this all means. Why is the U.S. doing this?
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will just give a small context, okay. And then please add on to the context. Here we are in the what is being considered by the Kurds is Rojava. We'll just say the Kurds, the Kurdish-controlled area. Mm-hmm. Here we are in the Kurdish-controlled area, which is largely being led by, there's many, right? There's some Kurds and there's some other multi-ethnic groups, but it's largely being led by the Democratic Union Party that they have there, and they're trying to create some self-governed democratic state that is not recognized by Assad or even Turkey, but it's been a support group for the USA as they have combated ISIS and have even detention centers of ISIS families and even ISIS fighters in the area. It is one of the areas where during 2011, when there was the Arab Spring uprisings on the western area of Syria, Assad pulled his troops over to most of his troops over to that area, concentrated on that area, which left the Kurds with open space, or just open without any sort of government control there. So they created their own self-government, and it created sort of a vacuum for them to be able to do their thing. But ISIS, imagine this area being surrounded by ISIS, Assad, and Turkey. And I don't know if you want to add anything to that. I just wanted to just lay a little bit of that groundwork. It's just they worked as an ally, mostly, I think, and it's been, I will consider, as a betrayal.
So you know where you were, this is where you were getting into, you consider it a betrayal of the Kurds.
Well, yeah, when we had our guests, Hema and Kenny, here, Hema was for the opposition to be in alliance with the USA. And I think this is a perfect example as to why you shouldn't ally yourself with the USA. The Kurds trusted the USA here, and look what has happened. It has been, that's why I call it a betrayal, okay. Because they decided then to team up, and of course the USA is only going to look for their interest, and they have no other interests here. So they abandoned them, even when the Kurds were fighting ISIS, which was the target for both, right? Or that was the intention that they would agree to, and that's the supports that they had. But look what has happened. They've abandoned them. And I think this is a crucial lesson for Nicaragua, a crucial lesson for the Venezuelans who want the USA to intervene. That's where I'm coming from with that, when I say that, betrayal. And this is a lesson for all of the countries who think that they should, you know, I just mentioned two, but any other countries other than Venezuela, Nicaragua, who decide to request support from the USA, like in China. Everyone should just deal with their own, I think.
Right. I think that's an important thing, because there's a lot of talk about, so I agree with you. I agree with the frame you're talking about when you say they're abandoning the Kurds because the U.S. will abandon anyone. They will abandon anyone once they believe it serves their interest to abandon them. There's no, because there is the Democratic Party, there's John Bolton, there's the Republican establishment. Basically, they're complaining about this act because they're saying, oh, we're abandoning the Kurds, right? Mm-hmm. Essentially saying the same thing you're saying, but they're not saying it for the same reason. They're saying abandon the Kurds because it ruins U.S. credibility. We won't be able to get somebody, some other sucker to fight our wars for us, which is not true, actually, because Trump is getting some other suckers to fight their wars. He's just changing the suckers. Mm-hmm. He's changing them from the Kurds to the Turks. And I think there's some. I think the discussion I'd like to have is what is the U.S. really doing here, and what is the debate? Because it is true that everyone says this is about fighting ISIS. Mm-hmm. The NATO says it's about fighting ISIS. Turks say it's about fighting ISIS. U.S. obviously says it's about fighting ISIS. Trump says it's about fighting ISIS. The Democrats say it's about fighting ISIS. This isn't about fighting ISIS. This is about controlling the oil of the Middle East. This is always what this has been about. This is about controlling Russia and controlling Europe and controlling China by controlling the source of the oil for all those countries. That is why the U.S. went in there. That is why the neoliberals attempted this war.
In Syria.
No, Iraq. Why is the U.S. in Syria now? Is because they were in Iraq.
Right.
Why are they in Iraq? Is because they went in Afghanistan. This is all started with the New World Order attempted to be established out of the world they had tried to establish with the 9/11, the war on terrorism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I understand that.
And the civil wars that erupted in there are all a result, are largely a result of the instability created by the U.S. occupations and U.S. military presence in all those regions. Mm-hmm. The refugee crisis is a direct result of U.S. imperialism. Mm-hmm. We'll get to these camps in a second. And I believe that what they say ISIS is ISIS ultimately is the label for people, anybody who puts any sort of resistance to the U.S. or to U.S. proxies.
I agree with that.
That's what they call it. They call them ISIS, you know. Yeah.
Jihadist extremists.
Exactly, right.
Yeah.
And so this is just resistance to it. And it's religious resistance because the secular opposition that used to be in the Middle East was destroyed and discredited itself and was destroyed. It was destroyed by forces like Israel and the United States supporting the Muslim and the Islamic cause as a counterweight to those national liberation movements that were secular. Anyway, let's not get too far afield. Mm-hmm. So the U.S. claim of abandoning the Kurds is a smokescreen to the fact that the U.S., for the people who basically want the U.S. to maintain their presence in the Middle East, because controlling oil in the Middle East is the best way of controlling the entire globe, and we have to maintain a presence. This is the Democrat thing. We have to maintain a presence in Europe because we have to have a military counterweight to Russia, and we will continue to deal with China.
You mean as a deterrent for Russia to gain more
support? Yes, no more support or any military advances in the region. The U.S. needs to be, this is the Democrat position, this is the establishment position, not Trump, not Pompeo. I think the position you're hearing that all these Republicans are getting upset about is the position of maintain NATO, basically the world order that's been established for the last 30 years, which is the U.S. leading the multilateral world, the free world, the Western world, into bringing democracy, and using that as the raison d'etre for advancing U.S. imperial aims. Okay, so that's what they're trying to hold on to, and I think Trump, and what is Trump saying? Trump is saying no. He's written tweets even like these tweets about like, oh, we wasted $8 trillion on this. We have to get out of the Middle East. Let's be clear about that. That is also a lie of sorts. There's no troops leaving the Middle East. There are about 200 troops, special forces, that were in that region, basically making sure that the Kurds did what was asked of them, and they were acting as an air force for them to be able to imprison ISIS and imprison their families in what amounts to concentration camps. And I want to get back to that later. They've been said you're going to withdraw those troops from that region and redeploy them. They're still in Syria. Those troops haven't gone on a plane and gone back to the United States. Those troops are still in Syria. They're just not in the region that Turkey is now coming in to seize. Mm-hmm. Now, what is clear, when the United States said they didn't give them a green light, they did. they basically said, we're not, you should, I think what Erdogan and Trump reached a deal. Now, why they reached a deal and what kind of deal is behind it, there's some speculation about it. I have some ideas about it. I also know that we remember just a year ago we were talking about Jamal Khashoggi and what Turkey had on
I was on just going to say
Bin Salman. You know, I think there might be some elements of that, but I still actually believe that the Turkey's not running the show. The U.S. is running the show. And it's Trump and Pompeo that are determining what's taking place here. And they are in a minority position because I think they are trying to shift the U.S. out of the Middle East towards a redeployment in facing China. And even General Mattis issued a paper just a year ago basically saying, can I read this, what he wrote?
Yeah.
Okay. This is General Mattis. Now, he's gone from Trump's cabinet, but he did say this and wrote this. Great power competition, not terrorism, is now the primary focus of U.S. national security. Meaning, he said, everything we do in the department must contribute to the lethality of our military. Our competitive edge has eroded in every domain of warfare, air, land, sea, space, and cyberspace, and it is continuing to erode. And he wrote, China and Russia are now undermining the international order from within the system by exploiting the benefits while simultaneously undercutting its principles and rules of the road. Basically saying that all the different things the U.S. has engaged in has ultimately benefited China, allowed them to expand their interests in the regions, particularly in Asia, and Russia in their regions. Now, at that point, I think Mattis and Trump and even maybe Pompeo were on the same page that we had to move away from the war on terrorism and have to move towards global war with potentially China and ultimately Russia. But I think Trump and Pompeo are shifting away from even the notion that we're going to be in the Middle East. We're going to essentially let that region, it's going to be the U.S. out, Saudi Arabia in, Turkey in, Israel in, Egypt in, let them fight the U.S. war, basically. In fact, I think they're counting on this destabilizing Europe and NATO and essentially let Iran and Russia deal with ISIS, deal with whatever instability is in that region. And the U.S. is saying, we're going to essentially redeploy to face our major threat, the major threat we feel like we face, which is China. Because China is expanding not just militarily, but economically, much more aggressively than Russia is.
I think you're somewhat right when they asked Trump, well, what about ISIS? And he said, well, let them go to Europe.
Yes.
There is the indication that I think it's like, we're not going to deal with it. We have an interest in China, and China.
Yeah, and U.S. is now making deals with Britain. Or we'll make a deal with, say, Greece. It's not going to make a deal with Europe anymore. It's not going to deal with Germany. Germany and France and European Union, forget you. This is no longer a multipolar or a world of big poles. We're gonna let them all fragment, and we're going to be the only big dog in the region. We have to deal with China. I think that's how, I think the U.S. is thinking they have to deal with China. And that's the threat they are most concerned about competing with. And I think that's what's underscoring what's taking place here. But I think the position that Pompeo and Trump are taking are definitely a minority position. But it is something that they're attempting to do. And I think I was writing to my mom because she sent me some articles. It used to be that Cheney was sort of the puppet master of Bush. I believe Pompeo really is the mastermind behind this, but he's not a puppet master of Trump. I think he recognizes that Trump is a master showman. You know, he's able to put on a big show. He's able to get a lot of, like, he makes these tweets that trigger people, that excite people. He's able to use Trump to make this look like it's a peace move, that he's actually appealing to, we're making peace in the Middle East. Absolutely not. This is not a peace move on the part of Trump. This is a war move. It's just a redeployment towards a more fierce war and a more aggressive war with China. But Pompeo feels that Trump is a very useful salesman and ally. And I think what he has an idea of changing something deep within the state. I think there's battles within the CIA over this. One of his top CIA advisors recently resigned for Pompeo. And you see this whole controversy over
here. And I think Bolton as well was one of those people, but he had more interest in Latin America.
Right, and Bolton would have disagreed with this move. Bolton believes that we had to protect the Kurds. That's where Bolton was at. Hmm. So Bolton was one of the people who would have been sided with Lindsey Graham. Mm-hmm. So this...
The senator.
So... The establishment is kind of on inertia, moving in this way. But I think Pompeo, I saw an interview with Pompeo in NPR, and he was very cold about this. But he's basically saying, what he was talking was, we have lost ground with China. and we can't afford to do this. And I feel like he's basically recognizing or believing that the U.S. can't just keep its, can't stand pat, can't continue to do what it's doing, because it's falling deeper and deeper. And it's like one of those things where the monkey reaches into the tree and grabs the nuts, but he can't pull its hand out. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, we have to release it and get our hand out. Mm-hmm. And I do think they have to release the, I mean, from the strategy that Pompeo and Trump is talking about, I think they're prepared to say, it's not about controlling Middle Eastern oil, or if we control it, it's going to be due to our relationship with Saudi Arabia. Tightening our relationship with them by making sure that our alliance with them is stronger. That means we're going to forgive them for any atrocity in Yemen. We're not going to really do much with Turkey when they go in and create atrocities in the Kurdish region. And I think they're basically going to let the region burn because they burned it down. And now let the fires be put out by Europe and Russia and Iran. Mm-hmm. And they figured, okay, Iran's going to win anyway if we just stay in there. And Russia's going to basically gain from that. And while we're staying in there, China continues to grow on the Asian region into Africa and even to South America.
Yeah, because they're now having a stronger interest in Africa.
Yeah.
They're largely in investments in their oil companies in other markets, right, as well as just...
So the two major lies here are that this is about protecting the Kurds, or that it's just about fighting a war on ISIS, or that it's a peace move on the case of Trump. None of that. So nobody has anything to offer us at the top of society here. Mm-hmm. The only way we can, and the left used to have a slogan, U.S. out of the Middle East. I actually think Trump might be doing a version of that, ultimately. Like, this is where it might lead. But that's not good enough anymore. You can't say U.S. out of the Middle East. You have to say troops out of everywhere and bring them home to take down our own government. I mean, that's the only thing that's going to get this done at this point. Because really all they're doing, these moves are not a result of a U.S. anti-war movement. They're a result of naked U.S. interests, of the resistance that they have faced in the Middle East, that they haven't been able to tap down, and other powers moving in there and taking advantage of that, like Iran and Russia.
Now, you said something interesting. You said that ISIS is not really, well, you implied something around ISIS may not actually be the terrorist group, that it's just a label, an old blanket label. Mm-hmm. I think that is what you're insinuating, to name any group that you just don't see is any part of your interest.
Yeah,
I think that's what you're saying. So ISIS is not necessarily a particular group. It may have been, but now it's a label for everyone that you need to sort of wipe out.
In a sense,
an excuse for wiping out, because ISIS is a very charged word.
Correct.
And that is what anyone will support and be standing by.
Right. And And there is so much racism embedded in it.
And there are multiple ethnic groups in the Middle East, so it's very complicated. But I do think that's true to a certain extent, where the USA and Europe labels whoever is not on their side ISIS. And this actually reminds me, labels them as ISIS, excuse me. Yeah, I hope I said that right.
Yeah.
And this reminds me of an episode called Black Mirror, where technology is able to trick the military, the army, give them, I think, a pill or a shot, I'm not sure, but see innocent civilians as the enemy,
right,
so that they are able to kill them, mm-hmm, and they're able to go after them. And then the civilians then, I think they do something to whack that lens or whatever they're being drugged with to see this, and then the army then sees that they're actually targeting civilians that are not actually the terrorist group or the enemy.
Yeah,
and that's how I feel this ISIS thing is. This ISIS is like this label that helps the army justify the killing of these civilians. I'm sure there are certain groups that the Taliban, for example, that do commit murder and in a square, and they do bring out, like, there was one where I did see where there are homosexuals they'll bring out and they'll terrorize them. There exists.
And I believe there is people who claim ISIS and who do those, what we call atrocities, beheadings, stoning of people. So I don't disbelieve those
stories. All right, so I want to just be clear with that as well. But largely, the label is being applied to civilians and people and maybe guerrilla groups as well, or people who are trying to actually fight for their lives and combat for their lives, right?
I mean, ISIS is also a product of the United States, like just like the Taliban was, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, look, the Mujahideen are the ancestors that led to the Taliban. The Mujahideen were supported when it was Russia, when the Soviet Union was in Afghanistan. Then later, Taliban has to become the enemy. And now, once again, we're finding the U.S. is looking to befriend Taliban.
Right.
You'll remember when U.S. went into Afghanistan, there was this whole, oh, no, we're going to support the Northern Alliance. You haven't heard about the Northern Alliance. Those folks have been betrayed a long time ago. Okay? So the U.S. does this all the time of like, you're my friend, you're my enemy, you're my friend. Mm-hmm. And to betraying over and over again, like they have done with the Kurds. And ISIS, in some areas, the people who were armed to go after Syria when U.S. policy was to try to like look to take down Assad, it's moved away from that now. They helped create ISIS. And they helped create ISIS in the instability they created when they did these occupations that failed. And they pushed out other people who were there, like whether it was Saddam Hussein or whoever, and imposed their Quisling governments, their like, you know, governments that were just there for the United States. Mm-hmm. So all of this stuff is either and from the top creation of radical opposition to the United States, radical Islamic opposition to the United States, or created from below. You know, so it's any version of those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, it appears to me that they're labeling anyone who's in the way of the U.S. plans of maintaining military dominance in that region. They're just putting ISIS on them.
Right. That's what I.
And I'm not disputing that some of these people are doing things that are horrible, but I'm saying that the authors of all this violence ultimately stems from the U.S. bringing raining fire into the whole region when they tried to control it, not to fight ISIS, not to get weapons of mass destruction.
Or toppling down governments for their own interests.
But it was all ultimately about controlling oil so they can control the globe. Mm-hmm. So the U.S. plan to control the globe is not over. It's still continuing. It continues apace here. The Democrats want to continue a plan, and they're saying, Trump, your plan is going to screw up our plan for controlling the globe. That's what the argument is about. It's an argument over how the U.S. is going to dominate the globe, at best with the violence that they have to use, because they're funding their military at record levels. And they all intend to use violence to continue to control the globe. But the question is how? And that's what's being debated here. There's no peace. There's no peace movement being led certainly by the Democrats. They want to keep them there. AOC wants to keep them there. But Trump doesn't want to leave for peace. Trump doesn't even want to leave for isolationism. Trump wants to leave to redeploy, to allow those troops to be repurposed for dealing with the threat, what they believe exists in China. And
when you say AOC, I'm not sure she has come out and said that.
She has.
So I'll
give you a Twitter quote.
All right, yeah.
So here's AOC. AOC, Trump's sudden withdrawal from northern Syria and endorsement of Turkey's actions could have catastrophic consequences and risks laying the ground for immense violence and suffering. She says, we can pursue a strategy to stop our endless wars without endangering the lives of innocent people. No, you can't. You can't. You've done it already. You've already broken the thing. So she's trying to say something without saying anything. But what she's essentially implying, like just all the Democratic Party, is we shouldn't be leaving from that region. And of course, the U.S. should not be staying. Now, the U.S. is not leaving to make peace. But you can't say that the U.S. shouldn't leave. You can't say the U.S. has to stay there to maintain peace for the people, because the U.S. is not there to put peace. So she's an imperialist.
I think she's asking for a transition to come out.
No,
I think I have heard her say that we should leave, we should get out of the Middle East.
Let me give you an example of how I know she's a liar. Didn't AOC say that the worst thing that we've ever done is the concentration camps on the southern border, right? Mm-hmm. Separating children from their families, separating what's happening on the northern region. We have 10,000 concentration camps, 10,000, supposedly 10,000 fighters in one here, but up to 70,000 women and children. Half of those children are under the age of 12 in these concentration camps. AOC knows that. She wants the Kurds to continue to maintain those concentration camps with her so-called peaceful, keep people safe. She's a liar. She came out a year ago, or even months ago, talking about how much she's against concentration camps, but now she wants to maintain them up in northern Syria under the guise of peace for people. The U.S. isn't interested in peace. Those things were created by the Kurds as a favor for the United States. They're doing violence for the United States in their name. the Kurds lost 11,000 people, so 70,000 women and children could be put in a concentration camp in the name of fighting ISIS. And AOC knows that. She's a liar. And she wants those concentration camps. She wants to keep the U.S. troops there. She's going to lie and tell you there's a peaceful way to transition out. There is no way to peacefully done. They've gone in there with fire and shock and awe. When you leave, there's going to be violence. There's no way. But you have to leave.
So I guess I'm wondering, do you see any... I'm curious before if I was to say anything about that statement, first I have to ask a question about... Because I have been reading in that Kurdish area, Kurdish-controlled area,
yeah,
that has been sort of a expanding women's liberationist sort of a women liberationist experiment there, and creating a self-government and schools and hospitals have been opened up for people. This is an area that has been, even in some people have said that even anarchists have been fighting in the northern area.
Yeah, I mean, so, look, if you want to call this women's liberation by basically, there are three major camps. Mm-hmm. Two of the camps are where the men are held, and the other one, Al-Hol, which is the major camp, mm-hmm. is the one where women are held. They literally separate the fathers from the wives, and the fathers from the children.
Well, I'm talking about... talking about the prisoners. I'm talking about the civilians that are living there.
But you can't talk.
Have been defended by the Kurds.
You can't talk about women's rights in a country which is putting 70,000 women or tens of thousands of women in prison just because of what their husbands did. So I'm sorry, you can't talk about women's rights. Just so you can't talk about rights here, women's the fight anti-racism here when you have 2.3 million people in jail and most of them are black. So you can't. So it's a lie.
You're entering, I think, a different area, I think, that I didn't expect that you'd enter, which is, what would you do with people's or your enemies' families?
So they're not my enemy. They should be freed. Those regions should be liberated.
If you had a socialist state and you had a socialist state and you had capitalists trying to fight you and you'd be in that...
There's no socialist state in Kurdistan. You've got to get them out.
I'm not saying that, but if you had, would you then... In the capitalists' families, would you keep the capitalist families concentrated in a particular area, or would you integrate them into society?
I mean, again, so...
So if you had an enemy, because your enemy would be the capitalists, in your ideal state, mm-hmm. would you then have them integrated into the society, or would you have them concentrated in a separate area?
If we are at war, we're at war. You're right.
What would you do with their families, then?
I don't know. But
I suppose that's whatever.
I don't have an answer for that because we don't have a socialist country.
Right, but they have their state, right? And they're combating the ISIS.
No, they're not. The U.S. is directing this. They lost 11,000. Mm-hmm. They're doing this because the U.S. has said, if you do this for us, we'll preserve your autonomy here and keep Syria or keep Turkey from coming in here. That's it. They're just doing favors for the United States. They're not fighting ISIS. They're being foot soldiers for the U.S. They've lost 11,000 people to do that, to maintain that. And the U.S. said, we'll keep our troops there so you no one attacks. They're not fighting ISIS. They're doing U.S. dirty work. And you want to defend it now and call it women's liberation.
No, wait. The society that they're trying to build outside of the detention centers they have created in a very different way than most Middle Eastern countries. Women liberationist experiments where they're allowing women to have military, women in the military, women be in self-government positions. This is different from how the rest. So it is a project going on there, and I'm curious. I'm just curious of that project, and what I'm saying is.
And what political power is underwriting that entire project?
Well, certainly not the USA.
The USA
is not meddling in the politics of that.
Yes.
The USA is meddling in using them
right.
as an army. And
because
using
the minute
them
the US pulls out 200 troops, the whole thing vanishes.
Right.
So the whole thing was underwritten with the idea that they were going to be foot soldiers to the US imperialism. So there's nothing about women's liberation.
Well, they started before the USA. Remember, they started before the USA.
They've been there for a long time.
It's not been underwritten because the USA. I'm not quite sure if the northern Kurdish-controlled area consider themselves to be PKK, because that was on the other side of Turkey. That was on the other. That's on the on the eastern side.
Because Erdogan has been talking about the people that are being talked about, even by the United States, as part of the liberatory force there. Erdogan has talked about how they're infiltrated with Marxist-Leninists from the PKK. So, yes. But, you know, it's... You can't have it both ways. You can't have Kurdistan, the Kurdish movement, be an independent movement that's about women's liberation and a different kind of world, which it unfortunately it isn't. What it is at this point is it's a proxy army for the United States in an imperial in an attempt of one empire to draw in any allies they can to try to push their interests in the region. And now the U.S. is deciding it wants to come out, and so their thing is collapsing. It doesn't have a basis to sustain itself when 200 special forces troops leave and the Air Force is no longer there to protect them. So no, it had no political center to itself, independent of the U.S. supporting it. So
well, remember,
and what they have,
they were creating it before the USA,
right? And what they did, but so what they were willing to do was to build a 70,000 strong concentration camp of women and children, half of them being children, in the name of fighting ISIS. And the Democrats and AOC have been willing to stay silent on that and say we should keep that thing going.
I don't think we should obsess on AOC. I think we should obsess on the Democrats as a whole, not just
AOC.
No, but AOC,
I thought AOC was Miss Anti-ICE. No, apparently she isn't. Apparently she wants concentration camps only down... She only calls them concentration camps when it serves her political interests. But when it doesn't, when she doesn't have an answer, then she doesn't call them concentration camps. That's called a liar. That's called a fraud. She's a fraud. What else do you call it?
All right, Andy.
I'm sorry, folks.
Maybe a fraud, not a liar.
No, I'm talking about AOC. You are just mistaken in believing that the Kurds are actually running independent. AOC doesn't believe that.
I wasn't saying that they are running. I said that let's also understand that prior to the USA actually using them, right? They were trying to create. They were trying to fight on their own. Combat and take care of themselves.
They were
doing a good job.
Well, they were sections of anarchists, socialists,
yes,
and there was leftists.
People there. I think that's a history I didn't delve into it tonight, because
that's a while ago,
right? And that's what I wanted
that's
to.
That's what,
but I wanted to highlight that was prior to the USA using them, right?
Yep.
So that's what I wanted to give credits to. It's just that there were anarchists there,
but
there were folks that were trying to create a different system, a different society. And the USA seized on it because they were used, and then it evolved and turned into something else where they created detention centers and were using and now doing the dirty work for the USA. So yes, I agree with that. But I feel like the way you painted it is it was completely underwritten by the USA.
Now it is.
But we have
That's the
now
thing.
It is. But let's recognize the timeline here.
I know. No, I completely agree with that. Back in the day, that there was some level of independence. But once it's no longer independent, now you do have. There are still socialists and Marxists in that thing. In fact, Erdogan was kind of poking fun at the United States for essentially finding common cause with a Marxist-Leninist organization, which is true. The U.S. is actually supporting Marxist-Leninists in the Kurdish region, northern Kurdish region, partially because there are PKK elements within it.
And now let's call out Erdogan as well, because...
Hold on, but that's true. That's true. Now, I have one last question.
Yeah.
Why do you continue to call it a detention center when before you were prepared to use concentration camp?
I think because I feel a little bit ignorant at the moment to understanding.
I can tell you
what is this is
there,
where you ask me a question. You ask me a question. So, I just feel that I'll say so-called detention centers. I did not look into if the families were being housed differently, if there was a specific area for them, or if it was just the men that had been the so-called enemy towards the Kurds that they are being held in a prison. For me to jump to that, all I kept reading was detention centers, and this is even from a socialist.
Saw a speech of Trump acknowledging that the detention center held fighters, so-called fighters, detention centers held family members. So remember what was Japanese internment? Japanese internment was you may be siding. We're putting families into concentration camps in the United States because you might be siding with the enemy. That's why these women and children are being put in a camp, because their husbands are considered enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I believe that most of those husbands, a lot of the people are caught up in a dragnet of terror and fear raised by the raise by the United States, you know, basically throwing anyone they can in jail who they think might be. Somebody snitches so-and-so and they go into jail, right? So of those 10,000 men, who knows how many have actually been actually holding a gun and putting it against the U.S. soldier or right. against the Kurdish or
there
whoever.
There are
right?
many innocent people.
So there's probably many innocent right. on the side of the men, right? And yeah. and I, again, am not on the side of the people who put the people fighting the occupation in jail. Mm-hmm. I'm against the occupiers. Mm-hmm. In this case, the Kurds represent the forces of the occupation along with the United States because that's what they're acting as. Mm-hmm. But in addition to that, they're taking the majority of people right now there are not those fighters. They're their families. And they're actually separating the men from the women. The other thing they're doing, and this was so disgusting that the liberal BBC was actually supporting this, is they're separating the women based on the levels of radicalism that they see among them. They're separating them based on you're more radical, you're less radical. We're going to separate you in these big camps of 70,000. I mean, it's gross. It's grotesque. There's nothing else you can call it other than a concentration camp.
Right.
So that's what it is. And now you know, but AOC has known all along. She does not, you at least face the thing of just hearing this for the first time.
Well, I hear why you're attacking AOC.
Just saying,
you're upset with her because here she is criticizing ICE and she's criticizing concentration camps.
And she wants to keep the presence there that will maintain those, that will literally maintain those maintain those prisons. I don't care about those prisons being maintained. No, they shouldn't.
And we should acknowledge as well that the Turks as well do have this discrimination against
yes.
the Kurds.
Yes.
So I think that should be considered. Look, this entire thing is very complicated. And I think I'm very... The reason why I'm very careful around all of this is because there is a lot of... there's a lot of history here, especially with the ethnic backgrounds of lots of different groups here, as well as the conflicts of interest. The USA has intervened constantly in this region, and you have big gangsters here like Russia and the USA meddling mm-hmm. here mm-hmm. and then they are then dividing and conquering here mm-hmm. like Iran and Russia together mm-hmm. and you have Israel and the USA and you have you know there was even trying to have some talks in with the Taliban in Afghanistan. So there's a lot going on here. And I personally was just overwhelmed just trying to get through it. And there are deficiencies in where I felt I could have delved into more, but I didn't think we were going to go into, which is you're asking me about concentration camps and the difference why I'm saying detention centers. I saw that and I didn't go into it at the moment. I was looking into Turkey and the history that the Kurds had with the Turks. Mm-hmm. I was looking at Assad pulling troops from the Kurdish-controlled area, mm-hmm. and I was looking at the anarchists and their history. So there's a lot. I'm just going to say, just to be honest with our public, that there was just a lot here. So right. that's where I'm coming from with this.
I understand.
You understand.
And this is a... Go ahead, if you want to continue, because I have...
Yeah. No, go ahead, Andy.
I think this is something I've seen that's really... A lot of the way the left approaches these things is they want to look... When they see these things happening in those regions, everyone takes their microscope and gives the history of the region and talks about what the various governments in that region are doing. And everyone doesn't... The problem is, and this is a problem on the left, and I'm not blaming you on this, but definitely revolutionaries should know better. The problem with the left is it attempts at these moments to essentially behave like the foreign policy department within the U.S. State Department. And try to look at the region, who should do what? What should Assad be doing? What should Erdogan be doing? What should the Kurds be doing? And all of that essentially lets the U.S. off the hook from revolutionaries who are situated in the United States, whose only goal has to be trying to uproot the U.S. war machine everywhere around the globe. Because apparently I used to say U.S. out of the Middle East. I think I've even said that in an episode within this year. I've said, well, our policy should be U.S. out of the Middle East. Well, apparently Trump and Pompeo are about to do U.S. out of the Middle East. Like, this is a redeployment. But apparently they actually have a vision for how to move the U.S. out of the Middle East, how to give up on that notion of direct control of the oil, use proxy armies, and the proxy armies are not going to be the Kurds this time. It's going to be the Turks and Saudi Arabia and Israel and Egypt. Anybody else they can get to join on board, all right, and say, we'll cut a deal with you if you act as a war machine for us in the region and destabilize Russia or destabilize Europe or whatever. But leftists need to be focused on our country, on our hypocrisy, on our lies, on our empire, on bringing that thing down. And that's why I'm really focusing on people like AOC and their lies around US troops out, and their lies, because she doesn't support that, clearly she wants to keep them in, and their lies about doing concentration camps, because she doesn't want to call a concentration camp one, she wants to continue to maintain it at the expense of both the Kurds and the people in the region. Like, and people are saying, oh, they're foreign fighters. No, they're not. 9,000 of those 70,000 are supposedly from foreign areas. All the other ones are from Iraq and Syria. Those are local grown. So that is why I have to call out AOC and the socialists, because no one wants to talk about that. And no one wants to, the same people who were so outraged about our concentration camps on the southern border suddenly don't know what to call these things. And like I said to you, there's a reason for that, folks, and it's racism. I'm not saying it's so much, it's because people cannot, they see a woman with a burqa completely over themselves and they lose their minds. And they think this must not be a human. That's what happens.
I think you're simply, that's a bit reductive here.
Well, that's why I believe people struggle to call a concentration camp a concentration camp here. Because that's what it is. Because that's what you will see. And this happened with the BBC, it happened with the CBS.
Okay, well then expand on what you're saying. Because not all of us just see a burqa and then...
Well then, I don't know why anybody wouldn't immediately say, what the hell is going on there when you were putting families in prisons and separating men and women from each other just on the basis of a show, what is not even a trial for these 10,000. These men didn't have a trial. They were like picked up and thrown in jail.
Think people still operate under the system that the people should be imprisoned if anyone is involved with heinous crimes like terrorism.
But there's no,
terrorism,
there was no due process here.
Right, and I don't know if the society has a judicial system where they are...
Well, they were all liberating women a second ago. The Kurds were liberating women, but now they don't have a judicial system.
I meant to say like a judicial system that is set up. This is very... We have to understand, if their society is recent, after 2011...
This is not done by the United States.
Right, but I'm just talking about the specific judicial system, right? It's fairly a new self-government. Where if you're telling me that the judicial system would be as polished and refined to be having people judged, I think that's why I'm saying this.
We know they didn't get a trial, and we know that they're in jail, where they're in camps. They're being concentrated into camps on the basis of that. And not only that, their families are being concentrated in camps. Historically, the reason that's been done, and this has been done in the Middle East, it's been done by our country as well, is that... You put their families in a camp as a threat to the other person who's in the other camp. That's why you do that. You do that to say, we don't just have you, we have your wife and your kids. That's the reason they're doing it, Eduardo. Everyone knows it. And the reason we're struggling, reason people are struggling to say, to call it out for the viciousness that is, for the absolute horror it is, and to not say, end those camps now, I am saying to you that a piece of that is racism. It's the notion that somehow Muslims or Islam or radical Islam is some sort of danger, and it's a boogeyman to us, right? And it's that fear. It's that they're using that against us. That's how racism works. I'm not saying it's the only thing.
Mm-hmm. I feel it a little simplified,
but that's the same thing people will say when we know that concentration camps that are occurring in South America or in the Mexican border mm-hmm. are due to racism. Racism plays a role in it, right? Not the only role, but it's racism in there, right? You have no problem saying that.
Well. I'm just saying that it, but the difference I think would be is that there isn't some version of an ISIS in Latin America.
Yes, right? they claim that that's one of the...
But there isn't a version of ISIS. So I think that when you say that, I think...
The same justification is used to control our border on the south. It's ISIS could get in through here. Some of these people are, and they use
that. That has only been said by Trump. Not anyone else has said that. Not anyone else. So I think when you say that there is true racism, right? And I'm sure that there's a factor of racism as well. To why not labeling these camps concentration camps? There are some factors in there, But to say that it's completely estate.
I didn't say completely. I said just like.
Right, but I think when.
Why are you so easy to say. But do you. Why is it so easy?
Because you're telling me, why am I able to say there's racism here and there's not racism there? It's not because I feel connected more to Latin America. It's more because there isn't a version of ISIS in Latin America.
What's ISIS? What is ISIS? Tell me that ISIS is so frightening you. How is ISIS frightening you?
Well, I'm only trying to tell you
because you labeled
the left has some racism going on that is a factor for people are not able to label those camps concentration camps, and I don't think it's that simple. Can you simplify it to just racism? I think it's a little bit. That's it.
I think people know what I said, which is I think it's pretty rich. That a person can think that a concentration camp on our southern border,
right,
which is justified by stopping the violence that's coming up from the border, usually around M13, I agree, it's gangs and stuff like that, but they will talk about ISIS and the potential of them coming up, and not just Trump. Trump will amplify that, but it's not just Trump who said that, because actually Obama has talked about the possible threat coming up from that region as well.
Did he say ISIS?
The threat of ISIS terrorism, absolutely. That can be. They did talk about that. That's
coming from Latin America.
Well, not that primarily, but that is one way that they can come in. They have to secure that border, yes.
I understand he said that. I'm not sure he said ISIS, though, per se.
But come on, he's talking about terror. Do you think he's talking about... What do you think he's talking about?
Well, I know Homeland Security was in place because of the terrorism that exists.
Oh, my God. I mean, Eduardo, you're doing so many gymnastics just to protect this thing. Why don't you just acknowledge...
We have to try to deliver... all of this as...
It's just obvious.
Fact.
All I'm going to say, Eduardo, is...
I don't like to be in the speculation world.
There's no speculation. Well, there are women and children being held in camps.
But I guess it's like... let me correct something. I do delve into speculation, but I call it speculation. I think that you say things as if it is the truth. And that irks me away. You understand? If I delve into something, I will say, I think I... believe, I speculate, I'm suspicious of, I will say that. You don't say that, and you say it as if it's fact, and I try to hold you back because I'm not
because
too
you
sure.
Don't agree. You're trying to
because you need to say, you speculate, you think, you wonder, you
no, I know for a fact racism plays a role in people not wanting to call these places concentration camps. I'm not saying I speculate, I know it. And I don't really
I
know
believe
why
it's a factor, yes.
Yeah, that's
I
what I'm saying.
But it's multiple.
Of course, just like the other ones. Yeah. But racism plays
a role.
But even
the way you frame it, it's like it's the biggest factor.
I would
say
the
way that you deliver it in this process, you label it as if it's the biggest.
And the fact that the U.S. ultimately...
And I have to sort of like, okay, hold on. It may be so many other factors here.
And the notion that we people believe that we are white man's burden. That is, that the U.S. is a democratizing force around the globe. The people essentially support the U.S. imperial project here abroad. I mean, here at home. They support it. We don't have an anti-war movement of any sort. And the left supports it, in fact, because the left is unwilling to support the resistance in the shape that it takes. It's not a pretty resistance. It's not a socialist resistance. It's not a Marxist resistance. It's largely a resistance colored in Islamic colors. It can do things, horrible things to women, horrible things to gays. I know those things have happened, even within that resistance movement. Mm-hmm. That's going to undermine it. But it doesn't change the fact that it represents resistance to U.S. empire. And on that basis, I support what they're doing in terms of getting rid of those occupiers, because that's my project. My project has to be in calling out my government for what it is and stopping it from doing what it does. And they're not allies in a socialist cause. They're not a socialist. But they are doing the hardest work, actually, in fighting the U.S. empire right now, because they're dying and they're in prison for it. And their families are in prison for it, for daring to resist the U.S. empire and their plans in the region. And so, no, I don't... I say free those people.
I think this is a very complicated issue. Very complicated.
For you. I think it's wonderful how complicated things get when people don't want to draw obvious conclusions.
No, because I think that, first of all, we delved into some things that I didn't know we were going to delve into. Had you told me, I would have read into it more. Like, the two things that I did not delve into were these camps.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk about Turkey. And here we are delving into the camps. The other one, where I think you asked me, is right. is sort of like, I don't know the specifics of how they are running their society, these anarchists, right now. I do know that some of the things that you say, it's like, I cannot even say what I want to say because I have to sort of make sure that you hold back from stating things that are fact-based, which I know upsets you and frustrates you with me. Yeah. But I will just state that so forgive me for that. I'm trying to state my point here. And I think I'm just talking to you now, Andy. I think I'm lost in what I was going to say earlier.
The reason the situation of the camps is important, and why I call them concentration camps, because supposedly the one area that these so-called leftists within the Democratic Party, they were looking to at least fight on that front of internationalism and racism. I knew that was a lie then, but this exposes that lie. Mm. And the reason I think it's so important is it exposes the viciousness of the U.S. project in that region. The only reason those concentration camps exist in northern Syria is because the U.S. Air Force, or the U.S. fighter planes, and 200 special forces were essentially helping the Kurds under the guise of, we will keep you safe from enemies at the door if you do this dirty work for us. That's why that was happening. No one signs up for that. No one loses 11,000 people just for nothing. They did it with the idea that they were going to be able to get some sort of Kurdistan at the end of the day, some version of that for themselves. Mm-hmm. But all this was underwritten with the U.S. empire. Let's be clear about that. And so I'm not exposing we agree, the Kurds were abandoned, and this is a lesson. Don't ever make a deal with the United States, because they will F you up if they have to. Mm-hmm. There's nothing good that comes from it, okay? And if you have a righteous cause of fighting for independence, the minute you dip your toe into the U.S. pond, it's over. It's like Midas touching gold. It's gone. You know, and so that is the lesson out of this. But the reason I talk about the concentration camps in northern Syria is because it exposes the lie about the liberals and the leftists and the Democrats and the Republicans who are talking about peace in the region, who are talking about stability. It's a stability on the backs of 70,000 women and children in North, and that's just a piece of it. And it's a stability on the backs of the other thing I found out, Trump has escalated the airstrikes in Afghanistan in the last few months. He's escalated attacks on Libya recently. This is not a peace president, mm-hmm. you know. This guy, he knows how to make war because he's with Pompeo, right? So it's everything's a lie. There's no peace president with Trump. There's no peace party with the Democrats. These are two war-making parties who will use anything at their disposal to make the U.S. empire stronger. What you are seeing is a debate about how to strengthen that empire. That's all you're seeing. And there's nothing in it for us. We can't take sides here. Who do you like? This empire building or that empire building? Both of them are a death sentence for the globe.
Mm-hmm. Now, Turkey. Let's call out the lie on Turkey as well, on Erdogan. Yes. He has been waging war on the refugees. And for him to say that this northern part of Syria is going to be taken over by him so that he can have a place or an area for the refugees is a lie.
Yeah, I mean...
So I think that...
Sure.
That is being... what he called out Europe and NATO specifically, and he said that if this was to be politicized, if the pulling out of troops was to be politicized, what Trump had done, by the way, and I do agree that there must be something that Erdogan has. If he was able to on the USA, I don't know. Now I can say I am speculating, because if Turkey was able to have undercover and spying on Saudi Arabia, and to pull out all of that information on Jamal Khashoggi. I'm pretty sure.
Weaken Bin Salman, because Bin Salman never had to pay a price for that.
And I'm sure that there are anything like that Turkey could have on the USA. It's a speculation.
I believe it's part of the calculation. But here's what I would ask. Do you think what's happening in this war that's happening right now is essentially the U.S. responding to Turkey, or essentially the U.S.?
I think it could be a distraction as well from what's happening here.
Well,
What Trump personally is also using this as, what do you call it, a distraction wagon tail, I think, something like that.
Well, so
from what's happening here from the impeachment inquiry.
Yeah. Well, first off, Erdogan, I think the biggest reason Erdogan's doing what he's doing is because he's becoming more and more popular in Turkey. And the move he just made is extremely popular in Turkey. Mm-hmm. Many of the parties are supporting this thing because they believe it actually helps them. What their biggest, the biggest concern that, again, these sub-imperialists in Turkey had is a strong northern Kurdish movement in northern Syria would strengthen the Kurds in southern. And that's what they mean by stability. They mean wipe out the Kurds in the northern Syria, mm-hmm. so that the Kurds in southern Turkey don't have any idea that they're ever going to get liberation or have a good life for themselves. It's not about refugees. We also have to, though, recognize that NATO, some of these refugees are coming from Europe. They're European citizens. And Erdogan called their bluff and said, "We'll take them back. If you want peace for these people, take them back." And what did those European countries say?
Silent. They were largely
no,
silent.
We're not. No, not silent. They said no. They said no. We're not taking them back. They didn't say silence. They said no. That's a different thing. So everyone's got blood on their hands here. Everyone. But the primary producers of this blood is the United States. And my feeling is this is not a distraction from Ukraine. I actually think this represents part of that conflict that's going on within the deep state around policy. Because I think the Ukraine is an expression of that. The advisor who left Pompeo's thing basically said, "I'm leaving here because Pompeo has been silent on what Trump did in the Ukraine and the attacks on certain CIA members who were whistleblowing, not the whistleblowers per se, but people who would have been on the side of the whistleblowers." That's a division within the CIA. Pompeo is a CIA through and through, okay? So he represents another section that's like, no, we want to do this. Did you know that Pompeo was actually on the phone call that Trump was on? Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. He was listening on that thing. So Trump didn't say anything. He wasn't cowboying an action. He was doing exactly what Pompeo would say needs to be done and said, because I do believe the U.S. is attempting to build strong relationship with Ukraine because they know they're getting out and they're going to need Ukraine to F with Russia. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, because they have been more armed under Trump. Ukraine has been more armed under Trump than under Obama with these Javelin missiles that go after tanks. Okay, mm-hmm. So it's the U.S. to me, or not the U.S., Trump and Pompeo and that section looks to me to be changing the way they're going to be making war. They're going to be making more. They are going to redeploy their forces and essentially let Europe, Russia, ISIS, with a few of their proxies, figure out how they're going to do this, and just let the whole region burn. I mean, by and large, and assume that Russia will be weakened and not strong enough while U.S. tries to take on China, because one thing they can't do is they can't take on Russia and China simultaneously. That would be a big mistake. Hmm. Napoleon lost that. The fascists lost doing that. They fought two fronts, right? And you don't want to do that.
Hmm. Right. I have nothing else to say.
I don't know if I have anything else to say either. I will say that this
turned into a very interesting lesson. I expected this episode to be largely around some of the history of the Middle East, specifically to Syria and Turkey. And I've realized in this conversation, in this episode, that we have largely concentrated on the current affair.
What the United States
right,
are doing.
And, right, right, right. And where my position stands is that, we even said before when we were on the call that I wouldn't have I don't think I would have a position on it, right? And you said something similar, I think. You said, I don't even know where I stand yet.
I'm still trying to figure out, yeah.
Right. And the one thing I will just say is that as I started from the very beginning of this episode, is that you don't make a pact with the devil, which is the USA, mm-hmm. right? And what I think our guests were implying, or one guest in particular, in the last some episodes ago,
Hema,
where she said that she thought maybe Nicaragua and the opposition to Daniel Ortega and the current government, that the USA should intervene.
Which we might be talking about next week with Kenny, which I think is perfect
now. Say.
Because we were actually going to talk about it this week, but this thing blew it out of the water.
Right.
But I actually think returning to Nicaragua and Venezuela and talking about them in light of this proxy army experience that the Kurds have just had is a good idea.
Right. So you want to say something around me delving into the history, which I think you think is some form of distracting the left. What would you say?
I set it off camera, but I think that what you've done here, like, is something the left does all the time. And I think you're trying to learn about the region. That's not what the left is doing. The left already knows these things. But what they do is they turn these moments into a history lesson of these regions, ostensibly to then make it about fighting U.S. imperialism. But they lose sight of that because they don't want to say what needs to be said, which is we want the U.S. to lose in the region. We support the resistance of any sort against U.S. empire, and we want our troops to be defeated out there so they can come back and take our government down here. That's it. That's why U.S. out of the Middle East is not a good enough slogan. It turned out it was a weak slogan because Trump's going about to. I do believe Trump in the long run and Pompeo in the long run are looking to get U.S. out of the Middle East. They'll put their proxies, like I said there. So that was never good enough. That was always a reform. What we have to do is the left has to be for revolution. And because it's not, it has to give a history lesson instead of a rallying cry for why the U.S. is the empire that needs to be taken down. And not just troops out, but taken down. Our troops lose, they come back really mad because they were lied to about the war they were sent into, and they take down the government. That's what needs to happen.
Yeah.
And I want to say one other thing. I do think if Trump is able to pull this off, this is going to be another way he's going to win the election, because he's going to be able to turn what he's doing into a peace cause to his base. It's going to be him being able to say, I'm the one trying to get us peace. I'm the one pulling us out of these, because he's been tweeting, we've wasted $8 trillion. Mm. This war in the Middle East was a disaster. He's sounding like a pacifist.
They didn't help us in Normandy.
Yeah, right. But he's been tweeting things that this is what the left has been commonly saying about the waste and things like this. And he's appealing to his base. He knows the truth. He knows this has nothing to do with trying to make peace. It's a redeployment, not a peace move. But no doubt, he's going to be able to say two things. He's going to be able to say, I'm trying to pull the troops out of Syria, and the establishment is trying to stop me. I'm trying to pull the troops out of Afghanistan, and the establishment's trying to stop me. I'm the anti-establishment candidate. And yet, right next to him is Michael Pompeo. And that's the guy you need to watch. If you want to understand what's coming out of Trump's mouth, you got to watch what Pompeo does. Because that's your guy. That's how Trump is connected to the establishment. Pompeo ain't anti-establishment, although I do believe he holds a minority position within the CIA. And he's found a guy, Trump, who's going to help him do it. And I think Pompeo's not alone. There's other people with him. But I do think that the mainstream establishment is trying to beat the hell out of Trump and Pompeo. I'm not sure they're going to be successful. And I think Trump's going to win because of it when he holds strong against them on this so-called peace move and basically fights them on the impeachment. Because I think the impeachment thing is actually not... I used to think that was just an election thing. I actually think it's a front. It's not just an election thing. It's actually a political front opening up within the ruling class over how to take each other down. Over policy differences, real policy differences. And they're afraid they can't take Trump down at the polls. They're going to take him down through impeachment. And they're right, because if they don't take him down through impeachment, he's going to win the election. Because people like what this man is doing. They like he's an anti-establishment. They like he's making so many people mad. He's making Democrats and Republicans mad. You don't think people out there are happy about that?
Well, it's interesting to note that there are now, 51% of the 1 in 4 or 1 in 3 Trump supporters are now supporting the impeachment.
He went to Minneapolis again and had a gigantic rally. I'm telling you, man.
Does pay people as well, so let's just
keep that in consideration. We went through this poll thing last election. You want to go through it again in the mainstream trying to say, oh, Trump's losing. That's their game, man. They're a bunch of liars.
Well, it came from Fox, I think.
No, Fox is also against what he's doing. I mean, yes, Fox has been opposed to a lot of this.
I didn't say no, yes. I'm just saying that I know that there are divisions in there.
So, if you want to believe polls, go for it. Look where it got you in 2016.
I guess, you know, this turned out like climate change. I always refer to that episode. This is left curveball or something.
You thought I was going to be friends with Erdogan or something.
No, I had no idea.
I am not friends with Trump.
I guess I'm not as predictable. And you're very unpredictable now.
Anyway, I will still say that I'm really glad we talked about this. It's forced me to figure out what do I believe is the U.S. really doing. This is my best guess that you heard here on this episode. I definitely can't claim to be an expert, but I think that's what we have to do. What is the job of those of us who want revolutionary change is to figure out what nasty plan is behind what the U.S. is doing, whether it be the Democrats or the Republicans or Trump or Pompeo, you know, and all of them are nasty. All of them have nothing to do with anything we want to even touch with a 10-foot pole. And my friend Greg, I have to repeat to him, you know, get the hell out of DSA. There's nothing in there for you. Because this it's a swamp. But anyway.
Wait, Trump didn't drain the swamp.
No, he's not draining the swamp. He's attached to a swamp monster right there with Pompeo. You know, no, he's not draining the swamp. He pulled the swamp in, Bolton, and then he fired the swamp again. You know, it's like,
I think we owe our listeners and viewers as well something that you had said you wanted to bring up, which is the deep state. Something around the deep state.
I think I've said that already about just this fight that's going on within the deep state.
I think maybe sometime, not now, I'm just saying as a topic, as an episode, I think, to delve in. I'm not talking about this person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a book I want to read first.
All right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Ooh.
Let's
next week, hopefully, Kenny. Hopefully, right?
Who is Kenny?
Kenny Zapata was with us on an episode around Venezuela with Hema. Yeah. And he had some interesting things to say to me about Nicaragua and Venezuela that I want him to share here and have us both kind of muse about. Because it's very much related to what extent these movements on the ground are connected to U.S. empire. Because it matters. It does matter, as we see now. To the extent that you're connected to the U.S. empire is the extent to which you give up on your movement. That is just reality. I mean, I don't think Hema believes that. I think Kenny believes that. But I think Kenny is of the mind that the Nicaraguan movement was more independent than the Venezuelan movement. And he said some things that were interesting to me. Like Guaido. Guaido, he knows, is a flunky for the United States. So
let's conclude.
Yeah.
You can check us out in any of our 5 platforms on Google, Play, Stitcher, BitChute, iTunes podcast, and YouTube. Please rate, subscribe, rate, review, and best of all, share with your family.
Give us comments on this one.
Friends and community, and sure, give us comments on this one. This one is... this one was...
Can I say one person?
Go ahead.
There was somebody on BitChute who was like, look at that Mexican socialist, blah, 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 talking smack about you. I shot him down.
I didn't even know that.
I did. I just shot him down. I said, first of all, he's not a socialist. Secondly, whatever. So I defended you.
Okay, by saying I'm not a socialist.
Well, you can see the comment if you want.
Thank you, and check us out next week. Good, Kenny.
All right, bye-bye.
Ciao.
1, 2, 3 this is our episode on Turkey, Syria, the Kurds, United States policy, Donald Trump, Democrats, AOC. Oh, Shirley, what the hell, man? We're trying to do something here. This is like important political work being done. This is Shirley, who's responsible for this great work, except for that one, right? That one's. We're not. This is soundcheck right
Thank
now.
God.
This is old soundcheck. No, I was running late. You're like thankful to my lateness.
Wait, Shirley, who did this new one?
Her name is Iris.
Iris.
Oh,
okay.
Right. So her name's Kohai Ari.
Ari.
Yeah.
Okay.
I-R-I-E.
R-I-E. Right. Oh, we didn't get you talking.
I like the art behind me. It's new.
It is new.
And I appreciate having art.
And the flowers coming out of my head.
Oh, what do you want to do about
it? Go ahead and talk some more.
You pressuring me, Andy, to talk some more.
This is the beginning of
it. You started with your friends.
Yes.
All right. Okay, ready?
Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.